Did you hear me cough? Did they go over the air? No? Oh, good. Welcome to tonight's program, The Molloy Show. It's about 7 past the hour. Yeah, I watched some of the Republican debate. I mean, the Republican, whatever the hell it is. Oh, my God. Garbage. There is nothing to report on there at all, although I do have some observations about Rick Perry's Texas that is burning to the ground. We'll get to that in a second. A little lighter item here. My God, did you hear about this? There's a new video game out. It's called Tea Party Zombies Must Die. Have you heard about it? This is for real. It's a project by Starving Eyes Advergaming, a website that provides games for online viral campaigns. Anyway, it gives players a chance to explore a post-apocalyptic Fox News studio and kill off zombies that resemble famous conservatives, including Michelle Bachmann, Palin, Gingrich, Santorum, O'Reilly, and Glenn Beck. And it's called Tea Party Zombies Must Die. Other characters in this first-person shooter include a character named the generic pissed-off old white guy zombie. Another one is the pissed-off stupid white trash redneck birther zombie. And then you have the expressed racist views anonymously on the internet modem clan zombie. And this guy dons the remains of a KKK robe as he wanders around the sign that describes Barack Obama as a Muslim. According to National Review Online, players get, quote, informative tidbits, end quote, between levels about how Obama's health care plan lowers the deficit and how, quote, most Republicans think the president's a Muslim, end quote. Jason Oda, who is the head of Starving Eyes Advergaming, told MRC TV the game was a personal project. And he downplayed the criticism that's rolling in from conservative circles. Oda said, I'm not worried about it affecting my business. There you go. Tea Party Zombies Must Die. I love it. A post-apocalyptic Fox News studio where you can zap these zombies that look a little bit like the creep bastards that have destroyed the country. Huh? Wouldn't that be fun? Ta-da! Oh, what do we got? Oh, Rick Perry's Texas. I got to share this with you. You know, Texas is burning to the ground. You understand that? I am sorry to say I don't know how many people have burned to death there, but I know that all kinds of acreage, I mean, hundreds of thousands of acres are burned into nothingness. Homes have been burned to the ground. The article that I'm looking at here is very, I think it's AP. I don't know who wrote it. But they focus on Bastrop County, Texas. And a person there named Betty Dunkerley. And on Sunday, just passed, Betty was forced to leave her home, you know, evacuate for safer ground. And there were very few options for shelter. Only a middle school and a Catholic church were open to evacuees. And the middle school is already crowded. And Miss Dunkerley said that she saw others who had been displaced, families from nowhere to go, with nowhere to go, and no support system in place to assist them in Texas. Some slept in parking lots with kids sleeping in sleeping bags and truck beds alongside the family dog. And Miss Dunkerley, who is a former Austin City Council member, oh, here it is, Huffington Post, told the Huffington Post, quote, a lot of people were trying to camp out, end quote. Now, what is not being brought up in this circle jerk on MSNBC tonight with these cretinous zombies, these crazy-looking Republicans, what's not being brought up when they get around to questioning Mr. Smiley, Rick Perry, is that the wildfires that are eating Texas alive are being met by an inadequately funded response team. Back in May, Texas Governor Rick Perry signed a budget that was presented by the state legislature that cut funding for the state agency in charge of, yep, combating blazes just like that. The Texas Forest Service funding was sliced from $117 million down to $83 million. More devastating cuts hit the assistance grants to volunteer fire departments around the state. Those grants were slashed 55%. And those cuts are showing their effectiveness now. There's nobody to fight the goddamn fires! And there's no place to go! There's no support system! This is, pay attention to this, folks. This is your smiley ass, Mr. Goodhair, Rick Perry. There's more here. As of Tuesday, according to the Houston Chronicle, wildfires had consumed 33,000 acres just in Bastrop County. Cleared out, burned out 20 neighborhoods, killed two people. Fires had also sprung up in several counties outside of Houston, burning at least 7,000 acres. Ms. Dunkerley, the former Austin City Council member, was lucky. She had a key to her church, and she was able to set up camp there. 800 houses turned to ash. She told her neighbors it looked like a war zone. Now, Texas is currently facing its worst single-year drought on record. Of course, that has nothing to do with global warming. No, it's El Nino or some crap, right? Agricultural losses in that state are topping $5 billion so far. Despite the history, a couple of years ago, they had drought conditions and water rationing and deadly fires. But despite all that, Texas governor and the state lawmakers failed to make any allowances for wildfires this year. As a matter of fact, they slashed the budget. And the consequences of the cuts to firefighting funding are becoming very, very evident. This is what these sons of bitches will do if they ever got in power on a national level. Texas State Senator Mario Gallegos, who's a Democrat and voted against the state budget, said, "We were outvoted. What can I say? Obviously, this money is needed for natural disasters like the ones we have right now. We do have a rainy day fund," he added, "and I would hope that the governor goes into the rainy day fund. But we have to also be responsible here locally, and cutting the Forest Service budget significantly was not being responsible." No kidding. Now, this guy, State Senator Mario Gallegos, had worked for 22 years in the Houston Fire Department. And he noted that outside major cities like Houston and Dallas, volunteer firefighters are the backbone of the Texas firefighting force. So what did Rick Perry and the legislature do? Slash the funding to these volunteer fire departments by 55%. Now, Annalise Cornley, who's the executive director of the Perry Watchdog Group, Back to Basics PAC, said that Perry had the money to fund volunteer fire department programs. They had the money. But she said instead, the volunteers were forced to take a 55% cut. In Texas, volunteer firefighting programs receive state money through tax revenues that are set aside in a dedicated fund. That's what it's there for. Jim Dunham, a former state representative, current fellow at the Texas First Foundation, said, quote, "We're all paying this money to a dedicated fund, and they're not spending the money because they need that money to offset their spending somewhere else. State officials," he said, "are telling people you need to pay taxes for fire prevention, and then they don't spend it. Instead, the funds are left in a general account." And Dunham said that's one of the gimmicks they use to say they balanced the budget in Texas. "Oh, Perry's good," he said, "about flying back to Texas for a photo op. But over his tenure as governor, we've just had chronic neglect of basic things that prevent Texas from moving forward." I mean, it's astonishing, right? And tonight, I'll bet you, by God, dollars to paperclips that the guy from Politico and Brian Williams are not going to ask Rick Perry a single question about this. Not a single question.
She was a race car. He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, dangerous. 21 past the hour. So anyway, Texas Governor Perry and the Texas legislature decided in their infinite wisdom to slash by 55% the state funds that go to volunteer fire departments across the state of Texas. They did this back in May, and the results of that slashing is now really obvious, right? Volunteer fire departments are the backbone of the firefighting services in Texas. In addition to that, just the whole forestry, firefighting thing, wildfire fund has been slashed. State agency in charge of, combating those blazes, the Texas Forest Service, that's what I'm trying to say, had their budget sliced from $117 million down to $83 million. So again, in their infinite, a boundless stupidity and ignorance, these Tea Party Republican bastards set up the people in their own state to be burned out. They don't care. They don't give a goddamn. They take the money that's in a dedicated tax fund that is supposed to go to these volunteer fire departments, and they steal it. They steal it. They keep it in the general fund for Texas, which makes it appear that the budget, a state budget, is balanced. Well, goddamn, I can do that. I mean, I can steal from all kinds of funds across any state and put it into a general fund and say, "Wee-hoo, look here, my budget's balanced." Aha! This is your Rick Perry for you. Robert Ryland, Democratic precinct chair in Elgin, a town located about 18 miles north of Bastrop County, called the decision to cut volunteer firefighter funds horrible. He noted that the area, his area, had endured wildfires in recent years, and drought conditions were already a big problem when the cuts came down. Ryland told Huffington Post, quote, "You're literally playing with fire. When you're talking about essential public services, those things do tend to be a third rail, even in Texas. You got to have essential public services. This is the first time in my memory," he says, "that I've ever seen funding for that kind of thing tossed around or used as an accounting trick to keep their budget numbers where they wanted them, where Perry wanted them to be," end quote. Now, the little town of, or the county, Bastrop County, Texas, has a small fire department, according to Mr. Ryland, the Democratic precinct chair. They have a small fire department, and the surrounding towns had volunteer forces. And he said, quote, "These are truly volunteers with other jobs and families. Just having them available in small communities like this is a lifeline for a lot of these folks. This is not something you should mess with," end quote. And according to Ryland, it's not just the funding, but Perry himself, who has been missing in action during these wildfires. Ryland said, quote, "He basically came down here and told us FEMA would be here Wednesday, and then he took off to go do his smiley ass, hi, I'm Rick Perry, presidential crap. Here he is, you teabaggers, this your boy, huh? What are you going to do, you dumb bastards, when your house starts to burn down and President Perry has eliminated all kinds of funding? And all of a sudden, well, I don't give a damn where you live. You can live in the heart of Chicago. But all of a sudden, there's no money. What are you going to do? You're going to do what the people in Texas are doing. You're going to stand and watch your house burn to the ground. You're going to evacuate. And you're going to wonder, what in the hell happened to the firefighting fund that Rick Perry stole? Jesus God. And then you have Bachman. Look at these people. Turn on MSNBC. Look at them. Look at them. My God. Perry and Bachman look like porn stars. Both of them. I mean, they really do. And Gingrich. You talk about a zombie. The only one that looks rational is Huntsman, except for the fact that he's not. And poor Ron Paul and the Godfather Pizza Man. What in the hell are they doing? Well, whatever. It doesn't matter. Oh, by the way, to add insult to injury, you want some irony? Governor Rick Perry has berated the Obama administration for not approving quickly enough a request he put into FEMA for federal funds to assist firefighting efforts in Texas. I'll be a son of a bitch He steals the funds in Texas designated for firefighting and then bitches and whines like a little baby about the fact that FEMA and Obama haven't provided him enough money. This is what he said. Quote, you see hundreds of thousands of acres of Texas burning, and you know there will soon be emergency declarations. And we did that now a couple of weeks ago, but still no response from the Obama administration. There's a point in time when you say, hey, what's going on here? You have to ask, why are you taking care of Alabama and other states, Mr. President? I know our letter didn't get lost in the mail. Jesus, God in heaven. He cuts the funding in his own state, steals the rest of it, and then sits back on his well-groomed ass and bitches because Obama hasn't provided him money. Oh, my God.
No abuse.
25 before the hour. God, I did it again. I went back to MSNBC and took a look at the... You want to know why this country is dead? Just take a look. Take a look at it. Take a look at it. Rick Santorum's up there now with his pink tie on. It's just astonishing. Oh, well. Joe in Temecula, California writes, and tonight I decided to watch this Republican debate crap that's going on. What the hell are these people talking about? What reality do they live in? Watching this, I feel like I'm having a bad acid flashback while watching an Oliver Stone flick. Rick Perry looks and sounds like Josh Brolin playing George W. Bush in the movie W. Michelle Bachmann? WTF? What the hell did she say? That children need jobs? What the hell is she talking about, Michelle? The parents need jobs, not the kids. I have no idea what she meant, but I think she was alluding to child labor laws, which I guess in her mind have just made it too hard for kids to get jobs. There's been a trend over the past year, Republican governors trying to repeal child labor laws. You know, those laws that prevent kids from holding full-time jobs or serving alcohol, stuff like that. In this current teabagger environment, I guess that's viewed as massive government regulation, stifling poor, helpless capitalism. Child labor has a long and terrible history. Hell, famous books have been written about it. You know, please, sir, may I have some more? Back in the days, we forced orphans to work for nearly nothing. Oliver Twist, anyone? Children have been exploited all over the world as a source of cheap labor. This exploitation continues to this day. This is also the case in the United States until the late 1800s when, thanks to the progressive movement, we got kids out of the factories and mines and into public schools. And that served two purposes. First, it created jobs for adults, and second, it helped raise wages. Employers had to pay more for adult workers as opposed to kid workers. Sounds like Michelle wants to go back to the days of no child labor laws, so Sally can get less than minimum wage job working over 40 hours a week while trying to get through the fourth grade. Or perhaps that's why Republicans want to get rid of public education, get rid of the schools and force kids to work for a few bucks a day. Is that the plan, Michelle? Anyway, Mike, that moment during the debate took me back a bit. Children need jobs? Really, Michelle? Holy hell, are we going back to the 1850s? Joe in Temecula, no, it's a lot worse than that. And I just, I watch this and I think, oh, my God, I live in a country that can vomit up these eight half-wits onto the stage as Republican candidates for the nomination for president? This group? And see, a lot of people think, well, come on, Mike, you know, they're Republicans. I'm not watching. These are not your grandfather's Republicans. This is not Dwight Eisenhower. Come on. Go turn on your television. Look at this. God. From Prairie 2. We now have the lowest percentage of adult males working since the last Republican Great Depression. The lowest percentage of adult males working. Mitt Romney came out this week with his bold new plan for creating jobs. Still more tax cuts for businesses and the elimination of government regulation. Blah, 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 blah. No matter that corporations already pay little, if any, taxes, that they are sitting on more than $2 trillion in cash and can borrow all the money they want for tenths of a percentage point in interest. With factories operating at 80% capacity and consumer spending showing only 0.8% growth, there is simply no reason for any business to expand. Indeed, it would be foolhardy to do so if they operate on the assumption that Romney will be president. This week's polls, however, show Obama edging out Romney and beating Perry by several points. In a purely hypothetical race between Obama and a generic Republican, Obama would lose. This would be a Republican like the ones people imagine still exist, but don't. Eisenhower died a long time ago. Personal incomes increased 0.3% in July, according to the Commerce Department. This is slightly higher than the modest 0.2% increase in June, which was the slowest growth in 7 months. Well, these numbers are weak. They are positive, and any sort of real stimulus would show immediate results as pent-up demand would be released by a positive outlook among consumers. 10-year Treasury notes touched the 1.9% interest mark in trading today, setting a new record low. This would be a great time to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure projects. But this is only a third of what is needed to bring us back to 1980. We could start taxing the people who have so much money that they will take that level of interest and call it good. But that would hurt the so-called job creators, right? Most particularly, a tax hike would cut into the multi-million dollar salaries of TV journalists, so it's never given serious consideration. Everybody knows, or should know, that consumer spending is 70% of the economy. But the thing that only rich Republicans know is that almost 40% of that spending comes exclusively from the rich. We are operating two economies, one for the lifestyles of the rich and famous, and one for the bulk of society moving steadily toward the world of Charles Dickens. Republicans have no incentive to make things better for the average American, and in fact, they're determined to eliminate the middle class entirely. It doesn't affect their economy if 20% are unemployed, or even if millions starve. Americans have been, quote, educated, end quote, to accept that they no longer have a right to make a living in America, or that this right ever existed at all. Only the so-called job creators have rights and guarantees of prosperity, as they are the only people who are created equal. The rest of us, we're created to serve them until we are no longer needed. PrairieNumeral2.com. Oh, dear God, how much longer is it going to take? Speaking of that, tomorrow night, who's our guest tomorrow night, Kathy? It's Margaret. Where is it? I've got it here someplace. Oh, here it is. Margaret, I don't have it in front of me, Kathy. She's a pediatrician. She is with the October 2011, action that is coming up. And, she's going to be on the program tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. And then next week, Kevin Zeese, who is also part of the October 2011 action in D.C. will be on the program. We are going to, Margaret Flowers, I believe, Margaret Flowers, Dr. Margaret Flowers. She will be on tomorrow night at the beginning of the second hour, and then on Thursday, next week, Kevin Zeese will be on. So you will have two opportunities to listen to two people who are involved very deeply in the action to take place in Washington, D.C., beginning October 6th, which I believe is what, Kathy, a Thursday? And going on as long as necessary, that's the plan. That's the hope. That's what is being organized. So for the people who have emailed me, well, you know, what's it all about? How can I get more information than what's on their website? We'll have Dr. Margaret Flowers, she's a pediatrician, on tomorrow night, second hour of the program, and then next week, Kevin Zeese, and I'll let you know more about that. Oh, good Lord, good Lord, good Lord. Oh, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, how he wants school boards to save money, no coffee makers, and longer skirts on the female teachers. Yeah, right. According to Crooks and Liars, in city union contracts, Wisconsin teachers now have to abide by a local handbook suggested by Governor Scott Walker. And in that handbook, it talks about not allowing workers to help a sick colleague. And it also talks about women teachers should wear longer skirts. What does that have to do with saving money? It's a 51-page draft of School District of New Berlin Employee Handbook. Parts A and B states that it goes into effect September 1st, 2011. That was a week ago. Here's a few of the changes. A sick bank that allows teachers to donate sick leave to seriously ill colleagues will be eliminated. Why? No set pay for overtime, only stipends. Elementary teachers will have to work an additional 205 hours a year without added pay. Secondary teachers will have to work an added 95 hours a year without added pay. There's a dress code. All skirts will be below the knee. No sweatshirts, no jeans, no large logos, no open shirts. And the schools have to get rid of all microwaves, refrigerators, and coffee makers.
She hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You know, a lot of us wonder why the Obama administration chose not to prosecute the torture boys in the Bush-Cheney crime syndicate. And now there's an account available as to why, thanks to David Swanson at warisacrime.org. And the source of this is the dean of the University of California, Berkeley Law School, Christopher Edley Jr. And as Swanson reports, if you think all the way back to January 2009, you know, right after the inauguration when the wars were ending, Guantanamo was closing, the Pentagon was getting oversight, employees were going to have free choice, the rich would start paying taxes, the air would be getting cleaner, and so on. You'll recall that the Obama transition team was you know, acting super populist and all high tech. They had questions from ordinary people for Obama submitted onto their website. The top question came from Bob Furtick of Democrats.com, and it was this. Quote, will you appoint a special prosecutor, ideally Patrick Fitzgerald, a Republican, to independently investigate the gravest crimes of the Bush administration, including torture and warrantless wiretapping? That was the question. Now, not only was the answer to that question from the new Hope and Change president, not only was the answer no, but it had to be inferred because President Obama refused to answer the question. And as Swanson says, I've always assumed I could guess why a president wouldn't want previous presidents subject to the rule of law, because then he would be too. Just this week, Swanson was suggesting that allowing the Justice Department to enforce laws against Cheney could save Obama's electoral prospects at the risk of seeing Obama, too, land in prison someday. I have no doubt, Swanson writes, that this was really a factor. However, we now have an account from someone involved in the decision process way back then, and that's the dean, the current dean of the University of California, Berkeley Law School. And he reports two other reasons for the decision to let all the war criminals off and devote vast energies to protecting them and covering up their crimes. The first of the two reasons is not terribly shocking. The CIA, NSA, and military would revolt if their crimes were exposed and prosecuted. And this explains the cover-up portion of the past 2.5 years immunity granting campaign particularly well. You know, and that's true. You know, the murder agencies in this government of the national security state, they would go bananas. They go berserk. And we would have probably a revolt, actual revolt, rebellion on our hands from these people. Now, that idea fits with the known record, which has included 7 former heads of the CIA publicly writing to President Obama to tell him not to prosecute torturers in the CIA. Now, the second reason, we're now being told, was that if laws were enforced against Bush and Cheney or their subordinates, don't laugh, the Republicans in Congress would retaliate by trying to block any useful piece of legislation. This is sort of morbidly funny in that the Republicans in Congress have spent the past 2.5 years blocking any useful piece of legislation and many horrendous ones as well. And they've done it with the background hum of war criminals on book tours. Now, this explanation fits with the theme of looking forward, not backward. You know, Obama's central theme. No, we're gonna look forward. Just as House Judiciary Chairman John Conyers told us in 2008 that it was more important to elect Obama than to impeach Bush or Cheney, as if you couldn't do both. Obama's preference in early 2009 was for looking forward to the passage of hideously corporatized legislation rather than enforcing laws against anyone powerful. Nonetheless, there's something jarringly pathetic about the notion that Dick Cheney is unindicted because Barack Obama was dreaming of a working relationship with the party Cheney left behind in Washington. Now, this shouldn't be as jarring now as it might have seemed in 2009, however, after watching Obama negotiate away anything Republicans opposed in any number of areas. And again, the source of these explanations, the dean of the University of California, Berkeley Law School, Christopher Eadley. And his comments will probably be showing up on video pretty soon. Edley, Jr., Christopher Edley, Jr. Berkeley, where Mario Savio, do you remember this, 1964? Mario Savio said, there's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part, and you got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. End quote. Mario Savio. How many years ago? Almost 50. So that's the reason, according to the dean of the California University of California, Berkeley Law School, the reason that Obama decided to let war criminals off the hook, which makes him an accessory after the fact, A, B, and a complete violation of his oath of office. So you might say that right now Barack Obama is subject to impeachment. Oh, it just gets curiouser and curiouser, doesn't it? We'll be right back. Seven past the hour. Coming up next hour, I have a topic that's probably going to freak you out. You know how the attack on public employees is full throttle right now by Republicans. Excuse me, I'm still dealing with this bronchitis crap. Now it's turned into... Laryngitis. Oh, no. I couldn't think of that word. Anyway, next hour. The next group of retirees that are in the line of fire of Republicans are military retirees. That's right. Republicans want to end pensions for members of the military who do their 20 years. Oh, my God. And they want to take away the pensions and replace the pensions with a military-style 401k, 401k plan. Now, I'll just give you a quick synopsis. Here's the reasoning behind it. Somebody joins the military at 20. By the time that person's 40, he or she can retire on, if they serve 20 years, I think it's 65% of what they were being paid. If they serve 30 years, I think it's 87% of what they were being paid for the rest of their lives. So in doing away with the military retirement system, a couple things will happen. First, here's what they want to do away with that. And the 401k would benefit the 4, 6, 8 year recruits, people that come in, serve 4, 6, or 8 years. And when they leave the military, they go, oh God, look, I got $7,000. Wow. Now, a couple of things are going to happen if this goes into effect. First of all, the officer corps will disappear. just gone. Because without the military pension, what reason does someone have for staying in and fighting his or her way up to just the rank of major, lieutenant colonel, colonel, not to mention flag rank? Well, what's the point? Once you get there, oh, sure, you get your pay until you quit, until you retire, and then there's nothing. So the officer corps goes. What happens when the officer corps goes? You lose your experience leadership. You can say what you want about the military. I'm just taking it from the point of view of the military as an organization. You lose the officer corps. You lose those people in the military who have a profound effect on organizing and inspiring, for whatever reason, the recruits who come in. If you lose the officer corps and you lose that inspiration, what do you have? You have people coming into the military who have seriously no direction until finally you have an enlisted corps that simply falls apart. So then what happens? Bingo. Privatized. Totally. That's where Blackwater, Z, whatever it's called, Dying Corps, all these corporations that provide private militaries, all of a sudden they find themselves in the catbird seat. Oh, well, we can provide you 500,000 soldiers. No problem. Now, since it'll be a private corporation, they're not subject to defending the Constitution of the United States. They're not subject to anything. No laws, no universal code of military justice, none of that. Uniform code of military justice, none of that. They're not bound by any international treaties, although our last two presidents, including this one, have not been bound by those treaties either. They just give their middle finger to it. They certainly will not be bound by the laws of the countries in which they are sent to fight and die for capitalist America. You see where this is going? I'll give that story to you in depth next hour. Pension plan. See, the military, they have, dedicated pensions. When you retire out of the military, you have a pension the rest of your life. And if the Republicans have their way, I got this article out of Navy Times. And as you can imagine, members of the military are dumbfounded. But boys and girls, I mean, over the years, haven't you made it clear that the Republicans have your allegiance, and the Democrats are a bunch of peace creeps and asses and half-wits, right? Isn't that what you said? Here's your payback. Here's your payback. So, at least with a privatized U.S. military, then all this claptrap about fighting and dying for freedom, justice, mom, apple pie, and the American way of life will disappear. Now, it'll be take your weapon, learn how to use it, and go fight and die for corporate America. And if you survive, you might get a bonus. So while the country is deteriorating to the point of almost black comedy, we now have this attack. Well, what did you expect? If pension plans for teachers, firefighters, police officers, postal workers, if all that is able to be bargained away, why not go after the pensions of the military? Once somebody retires out of the military, what good are they? Nothing. They just become a liability. And if they live 40 years after they get out of the service, guy goes in when he's 20, gets out when he's 40. If he lives to be 80, dear God in heaven, do you know how much money he's going to draw? Capitalist America can't allow that. You didn't think this would happen, did you? You never thought, did you, that they'd go after the military? Well, it's happening. So I just wonder tonight, I read this today, and I was looking over, I thought, what? What? And if it would have been on some website that, occasionally has a bunch of BS, I would have had a hard time believing it. But this is in Navy Times. It's put out there by Military Times, and that's the news service that put this story together. And as you can imagine, soldiers, airmen, Marines, they're freaking out. And I'll have some quotes next hour from some of these members of the various services, how they react, how they have reacted to this initial news that the military retirement system is on the chopping block to be replaced by a 401k. Oh my God. But this is how the country is being dismembered, taken apart by Republicans. Now, I am not in favor of an aggressive military. I'm not in favor of militarism at all. I'm just pointing this out. You go to just about any military family and, oh my God, we vote Republican here. You know, we don't want anything to do with those leftist Democrats and some of those other folks. Republicans love us. They always support the military. No, they don't. Republicans have never supported the military. It's always been the Democrats. But the Republicans, since they are liars, have put the story out that it's them. And the Democrats, since they are cowards and tend to urinate in their own trousers, they haven't fought back with the truth and never will. We'll be right back. Revolution. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a guest on, Dr. Margaret Flowers, who is a pediatrician. She's one of the people behind the organization of October2011.org. That is the event that begins Thursday, October 6th, and runs for as long as it runs in Washington, D.C. And then next week, Kevin Zeese, who is also one of the organizers, will be a guest on the program. Kevin Zeese is an attorney with itsoureconomy.us and comehomeamerica.us. So tomorrow night and next week. And regarding the bit there I was sharing with you from David Swanson about the reasons that Obama decided not to pursue and thus became an accessory after the fact of the torture brothers, the war crime perpetrators, Bush and Cheney, and anyone associated with them in those 8 years. Regarding that, Reg writes in, what is most distressing and unjust is that the violations are so clear. Torture is illegal under domestic, U.S. military, and international law. There is no legal defense for its use. To the contrary, there is tremendous precedence in the law to support the criminality of torture by governments anywhere in the world. I cannot imagine, she writes, that any one of us, as ordinary citizens, would be allowed to go unpunished if we committed an act in violation of all three sets of laws, domestic, military, and international. Especially, as is the case with Bush and Cheney, who have openly admitted having committed the crime. Having said that, Barbara Walters has joined the other media whores who have invited Cheney to discuss his new book. It's another reason I refuse to watch The View. With liberty and justice for all, wretch. Yeah. At a private function in a Colorado resort a couple of weeks ago, oil billionaire Charles Koch stood in front of hundreds of conservative millionaires and said that the 2012 election will be, in the words of Saddam Hussein, the mother of all wars. Yeah, he decided to quote Saddam Hussein. And he then read through a list of 32 contributors who gave more than $1 million each to bankroll the network of capitalist special interest groups that aimed to tear down Barack Obama. Now, Brad Friedman, bradblog.com, the Brad Friedman who substitutes for me on a regular basis, has done some investigative work, and there are transcripts, there are videos of taken clandestinely of this meeting. I don't know how he got them, but they're at Mother Jones, motherjones.com, and at bradblog.com. And if you want to understand just how serious the Koch brothers are about the destruction of this country, you need to go to Brad's website. It's Inside the Koch Brothers 2011 Southern Seminar. And it's here at his website. And it's also at Mother Jones. Now, what Brad has is some transcript or audio of Chris Christie, New Jersey governor, and what he had to say at this gathering. But you need to read this. Parts one and part two, both of which are at bradblog.com and Mother Jones. And it's an exclusive. Brad is the only one who has put this together. Now, I'm serious here. Go to bradblog.com. Start there. And read this. Jesus Christ. If these people were foreigners suggesting what is being suggested at the Koch brothers seminar, they would be arrested and put on trial for treason. And if found guilty, the feds still have the death penalty, would probably be executed. But they are corporate billionaires. They are capitalists of the highest order. And they are destroying the United States. Go to bradblog.com, please, and read his report. 5 before the hour. I notice on MSNBC, just looking at the monitor here, there's all kinds of deep discussion going on about what was said by these Republican clowns tonight. Deep discussion about what? I think Robert Gibbs, former press secretary, just put it pretty much succinctly and all that needed to be said. Out of all eight of those halfwits that stood on that stage tonight, there was not a single, not a single sentence regarding how any of these clowns would solve the unemployment process and unemployment problem in this country, get the country working again. Not a thing. Nothing. There's nothing there. The sad part is, there's a lot of bobbleheads in this country who are just absolutely convinced that Rick Perry would make a wonderful president, or Mitt Romney would make, or that the Godfather, the Pizza Man, would make a wonderful president, or that Michelle, well, no, not that, or that Ron Paul would make a wonderful president. I mean, oh my God. The murder family. The murder family. All families have their own 9/11 stories. For former Vice President Dick Cheney and his oldest daughter, Liz, the uncertainty they experienced on the day of the tragedy nearly 10 years ago is no less vivid today. The Cheneys open up in the Sunday Times about what they recall feeling on September 11, 2001, and the years since the day's catastrophic events that captured the attention of the country and the world. The former vice president says of his wife, Lynn, quote, I focused on the job, and she focused on the family. I remember her saying, the kids are safe. It was very intense. The kids? Cheney's thoughts on 9/11 are among numerous intriguing insights revealed in the former vice president's new memoir, In My Time. Released on August 30th, the book pens a series of shocking revelations ranging from a secret resignation letter to battles within the Bush administration. For Liz Cheney, her father's dealings with all these issues were far from divisive. In a time when some Washington families crumble in the limelight, Liz saw the opposite happen when it comes to the unity of the Cheney clan. She says in the Sunday Times, quote, people strive so hard for some professional goal. They sacrifice things, but I don't feel that that happened to us. Politics has driven a lot of families apart, but it made the four of us incredibly close because we were engaged in a group effort. Oh, so what is Liz saying here? It was a group vice president thing. Oh, I see. Okay, right. Years after Dick Cheney's tenure as vice president, his time served in the White House remains a part of his legacy. Since leaving Washington, he's battled his way through a host of health issues, including undergoing heart surgery last July at age 70. He is now allowing his career to take a back seat to something else important to him, his family. I have no regrets, he says. Well, I regret lending Liz my car. It was a nice car, too, a Mazda RX-7, a nifty little two-seater. She rear-ended someone. Oh, yeah. The murder family at home. Whew. Good God. You know, the other, what was it last night? I was talking about treason committed by Republican traitors and how it never stops. The Koch brothers. So many capitalists in this country have committed definable treason against the United States. And, of course, nothing happens. Bush and Cheney and you and Gonzalez and Rumsfeld and the rest of that tribe, if what they did was not treason, I don't know what is. So what is treason? In law, treason is the crime that covers some of the more serious acts of betrayal of one's sovereign or one's nation. That's all you need to know, really. It's in Wikipedia. Treason is the crime that covers some of the more serious acts of betrayal of one's nation. A person who commits treason is known in law as a traitor. In many nations, it is also considered treason to attempt to conspire to overthrow the government. even if no foreign country is aided or involved by such an endeavor. Attempt to overthrow the government. Attempt to destroy the society. Outside legal spheres, the word traitor may also be used to describe a person who betrays their own political party, their own nation, their family, their friends, their ethnic group, whatever. A traitor. Someone who betrays their own nation. A traitor. In English law, high treason, which was going after the sovereign, or trying to destroy the country. In English law, high treason was punishable by being hanged, or if it was a man, drawn and quartered. If it was a woman, burnt at the stake, or beheading, which was reserved for the royalty and the nobility. Treason was the only crime which resulted in these penalties until they were abolished in order 1814, 1790, and 1973, respectively. 1973? Beheading? In William Shakespeare's King Lear, when the king learns that his daughter, Regan, has publicly dishonored him, he says, "They could not, would not do it. 'Tis worse than murder." Which was a conventional attitude at that time. In Dante's Inferno, the ninth and lowest circle of hell is reserved for traitors. Judas, who betrayed Jesus, suffers the worst torments of all, being constantly gnawed at by one of Lucifer's own three mouths. Brutus is there. So is Cassius. I just mention this because Republicans who say, as this filthy Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said at the beginning of this term of Congress, "Well, my objective is to, I'm not doing him very good tonight. The main objective was to get rid of Obama. They have done everything in their power to destroy the United States by stopping us dead in the water." Now, you know, a lot of people will say, well, that's not a bad idea, Mike, because the United States is a warmongering, dying empire that will kill anyone who gets in our way. And even the ones that don't get in our way would kill them anyway. So I guess you could make that argument, but those are not the motives of Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's motives are to stop the country, destroy the country until the neo-fascists can take over, and then the blood orgy really begins. So John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Mitch McConnell, the rest of these Republicans are definably traitors to the United States. They violate their oath of office. They stomp on the Constitution. And nothing will be done about it. Now, you can make the same argument about Barack Obama. So, the evidence is there. If you want to take a look, the evidence is there. The real truth is, and I hate to say this because, you know, a lot of Democrats will send me emails and say, "Well, you're just as bad as these right wingers." You know, the truth is the truth. What do you go? I mean, how do you avoid it? How do you avoid it? Just like we were talking about the other night, Justice Jackson at the Nuremberg War Crimes Trial said that if we set out penalties for violation of the law and apply them to the German high command, then we cannot not apply them to the American high command. So, these acts of treason committed by Republicans, these traitorous acts, is not Barack Obama committing the same acts? Is Barack Obama right now, and I hate to say this, but is he not liable in a different time, different place for impeachment? I'm surprised that the Republicans in the House Judiciary Committee have not begun impeachment hearings. I'm just flabbergasted. If he wins re-election and the Republicans retain the majority, I would not be surprised if that happens. Be real. That's what happened to Clinton. As long as Clinton was useful to them, they allowed him to operate. As long as Barack Obama is useful to the capitalists, they'll allow him to operate. But what happens if Barack Obama is no longer useful? Oh, my. Night, isn't it? We didn't do any church tonight. Well, I got a couple things here. This is a guy. Let's see, where is it? I think he's a Baptist. A Baptist preacher. Ernest Willis, 52-year-old New Hampshire man, was found guilty of raping and impregnating a 15-year-old girl from his church. And then the girl was shipped to Colorado by members of the church leaders, to give birth in secret to the rapist's baby. The rapist now faces up to 54 years in prison for the sexual assault. And then the update, the Associated Press reports that he was sentenced to 15 to 30 years in prison for raping Tina Anderson twice. The judge said that Reverend Willis, quote, robbed the girl of her childhood, end quote. But the Baptist preacher was stoic. And although he said he was sorry and ashamed for his thoughtless act of sexual misconduct, he never admitted to forcible rape or to a second rape. At the time, the girl, Tina Anderson, was 15. She knew Reverend Willis from babysitting his children and from attending the same fundamentalist Baptist church in Concord, New Hampshire. The church made the girl apologize to the congregation when she discovered that she was pregnant. And she was not allowed to tell the church members that the pregnancy occurred because she was raped. So with the consent of the 15-year-old girl's mother, the pastor then shipped this teenager to the home of a Colorado couple that she didn't know and arranged for her baby to be adopted. The prosecutor in this case told the jurors that the 15-year-old girl, quote, got shamed, shunned, silenced, and sent away, end quote. Wow. So that's a little bit of church for tonight. Here's another little bit. A weekend that's coming up of religious-themed observances at the Washington National Cathedral that's coming, marking the 10th anniversary of the Bush-Cheney September 11th terrorist attacks, will include these religious observances, will include a Buddhist nun and a Muslim imam, but not an evangelical Christian. Which has led the head of the Southern Baptist Convention to ask President Obama to reconsider attending the event. Yeah, don't go, Mr. See, the president has nothing to do with this. But the head of the Southern Baptist Convention is saying, no, don't go, Mr. Obama. What difference does it make, you son of a bitch? You know that Obama's a Muslim. What do you care? What do you care? Now, there will be an interfaith prayer on a prayer vigil on September 11th that will feature the dean of the cathedral, the bishop of Washington, a rabbi, a Buddhist nun, an incarnate lama, a Hindu priest, and the president of the Islamic Society of North America, and a Muslim musician, and a partridge in a pear tree. However, Southern Baptists, who represent the nation's largest Protestant denomination, were not invited to participate, and neither were leaders from any evangelical Christian organization. You know, can I get an amen on that one? Amen! Can I get a hallelujah? All right. Frank Page, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention Executive Committee, said, it's not surprising. There is a tragic intolerance toward Protestants. Oh, my God. Really? And particularly toward evangelicals. And I wish the president would refuse to speak unless it was more representative. End quote. Well, Mr. Page, you hypocritical little slug. Are you kidding me? You go out of your way, you and your whole religious clutch of freaks go out of your way to destroy Obama's religiosity. I mean, it infuriates me. Once again, I hate to be put in the position of siding with people who might say Obama needs to be impeached, or siding with people that go after Obama based on religious issues, especially the Southern Baptist Convention, which is it's just a collection of rabid racists. That's what the Southern Baptist Convention started out as. Whites only. Huh? The National Cathedral's Director of Communications confirmed that Southern Baptists were not invited. He told the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Radio Network, quote, the goal was to have interfaith representation. The cathedral itself is an Episcopal church, and it stands to reason that our own clergy serve as Christian representatives. Well, that makes sense. Oh. Mr. Page said Obama should cancel his appearance. You're damn right. Tell that boy to cancel his appearance. I think it would send a very strong and very positive signal to the left-wing extremists in our country that the president ought not show up. The left-wing extremists? But we're all atheists, you halfwit. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. tell you the newest group to be targeted for retirement fund destruction here in a moment. But a couple other things. In North Carolina, there's a county there, Henderson County, that is known for its apple crop. And it's the largest apple-producing county in the state of North Carolina. There's 150 different growers there, and they have about 5,000 acres in apple orchards. Annual apple revenues come in between $20 and $25 million in an average year. Now, this is in North Carolina. This is a state that historically, except for certain areas, has a large rural or farming on one level or another population. Yeah, there are areas of North Carolina that, like the Research Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, there are universities there. There are areas of North Carolina that are considered very progressive, even though it's also the state that produced Jesse Helms and some of these other crazy bastards. But North Carolina has a problem. The apple growers up there have a problem. It's the same problem I told you about a couple months ago down here in Georgia. The growers in Henderson County, through their growers organization, are saying that, you know, it's hard enough to deal with the weather. They say the weather rather than the global climate change, which is going to at some point end apple growing in the North Carolina mountains, because as the weather warms and viruses that affect trees and insects that affect trees move further north, at least these kinds of trees, fruit-bearing trees, as they move further north because of global warming, eventually, may not be for decades, but eventually the apple industry in North Carolina is going to disappear. But anyway, right now, they're faced with a shortage of workers because the county, Henderson County, North Carolina, serves as a holding hub for undocumented workers who are arrested. Uh-huh. You know where this story's going, don't you? Newspaper in Asheville, the Asheville Citizen Times, reported that apple growers say workers are staying away from Henderson because the county is what's called a 287G county. 287G county. That means it serves as a federal holding area and transportation hub for such workers, as the workers are rounded up. Other parts of the country or the state, and in Henderson, rounded up, put in detention centers, and eventually shipped back home. Now, regardless of what the right-wing dribble talkers will tell you, Barack Obama has deported more undocumented workers in the first 2.5 years of his presidency than the Bush crime family did in 8 years of theirs. So when you hear people screaming and frothing and fuming like this half-wit Rick Perry about the amnesty programs proposed by Barack Obama, it's further proof that Republicans, as I've said many times to the last person, are filthy liars. Absolute liars. Barack Obama has been instrumental in his Justice Department. I think they've deported over 1 million undocumented workers. Just, you know, threw them out of the country. But Republicans have never involved themselves with facts, especially where it concerns the color guy in the White House. Remember what Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said at the beginning of this session of Congress. Our sole objective here is to make Barack Obama a one-term president. That's what we're focused on, and that's what we're going to do. And we doubt seriously if any serious legislation is going to be passed, because Barack Obama has got to be a one-term president. So, okay. In the meantime, a lot of apple growers in North Carolina and other places, but let's stay in North Carolina, considered themselves to be Republicans for a number of reasons. So my message, of course, to the apple growers is the same as it was to the peanut and cotton growers in South Georgia. How do you feel now? I mean, you helped vote these miserable sons of bitches into office, these Republicans, with their insistence on going after these illegal immigrants. How do you feel now? How do you feel about the policies that you insisted on having in place as your crops are rotting in the field or decaying on the trees? How do you feel? I mean, you okay with all this? A guy named Anthony Owens, who's a grower and president of the Blue Ridge Apple Growers Association in Hendersonville, North Carolina, says, quote, several growers can't find help at all. In some instances, he says, it's hard to find enough people to help harvest what you've got, end quote. I guess this would be appropriate at this point for me to come up with a duh. I mean, you people didn't realize this when you insisted that these dirty ass brown people be rounded up, put in detention. Did you resist when detention centers and holding pens were built in your county? What did you think those were for, boys? Did you think those were for peanut harvesters down here in South Georgia that were undocumented? What did you think? Did you think that the undocumented workers in North Carolina were going to be exempt? Man, y'all have been around too much of those chemical pesticide sprays that you spray all over those trees. You know what I'm saying? According to the Asheville Citizen Times, since the Sheriff's Department started this program in October 2008, now, that's before Barack Obama was elected president. Keep that in mind. This is Bush policy. Keep this in mind. More terrorism from this son of a bitch, the Bush crime family. More treason. More destruction of this country. Huh? Anyway, since the Sheriff's Department started the program in October 2008, and the sheriff didn't do it on his own. I mean, you know, this comes from federal mandates and state mandates, too. But since this started, Henderson County has arrested 13,726 people and submitted their fingerprints to the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, ICE. All of the mountain counties in North Carolina participated in this federal Secure Communities program. Right, that's what it's called, Secure Communities. As these programs devastate communities, rip them to pieces, make farmers go bankrupt, cause people to lose their homes and their farms and their orchards, it is still called, Secure Communities program. You like that? That's a Bush crime family appellation. Secure Communities. You know, like USA Patriot Act. You know, like Homeland Security. Right? Huh? Here's another one. Secure Communities Act. Or program. That is ripping farming communities to pieces. Because, you know, we got to get rid of these brown-skinned freaks that have come up here from, God, I don't know, Mexico? Is that where they're from? Ooh. The program allows ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to check fingerprints of anyone arrested for just about any reason. And as a result, according to the spokesman for the Growers Association, workers are afraid to come there. More on this in a minute. This the story even gets better or worse, depending on your point of view. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
To Oregon to harvest your hops. Pick the beets from your ground, pick the grapes from your vines, to set on your table your light sparkling wine. It's green pasture.
Excuse me, 21 past the hour. So Hendersonville, North Carolina, Henderson County, big apple growing part of North Carolina. All of a sudden, the apples are riding on the trees. Apple picking season started, as a matter of fact, about a month ago. But for certain species of apples. But the undocumented workers that the apple growers always use, you say, the capitalists. Well, these aren't really capitalists. These are small businesses. These are independent growers. And they've always relied on undocumented workers. But the real capitalists, the ones who are behind the idea of blocking undocumented workers from doing this kind of work that American workers won't do, whether it's picking cotton or peanuts or apples or whatever, the big capitalists, the factory farms that are behind this legislation to throw out the undocumented workers, they don't give a goddamn. They want the workers gone so that the small farmer will be driven out of business. Now, the irony here is the small farmer usually votes, a lot of them, at least here in the South, will vote Republican. Why? I don't know. I've never been able to figure this out, but they'll do that. Not all. It's not a blanket indictment, but enough of the people here in the South vote Republican. And every time they do that, they take a knife, usually a paring knife, and they just draw it right across their own throats. And they sit there and the blood gushes out onto the voting machine and they go ahead and vote Republican anyway. It's the goddamnedest thing. I just can't figure it out. So now, here it is, the apple growers. Henderson County Sheriff Rick Davis, whose responsibility it is to round up brown people and people who speak a different language other than English and demand their papers, and when they cannot produce them, put them into holding pens. The sheriff, Rick Davis, said he has met with farmers to discuss this labor shortage, which, by the way, growers say has worsened significantly over the past 2 years. And the sheriff says, well, you know, I sympathize with you boys, but I got to enforce the law, which he does. Can't hold the sheriff responsible, right? Just because people are starving, Sheriff Davis, old Rick, he can't turn the other way when somebody walks into 7-Eleven and steals bread. I mean, you know, and he can't turn the other way when these undocumented workers show up to pick apples. So, sorry, I sympathize with you, the sheriff says, but nothing I can do, right? Huh? The sheriff said, you know, we're here to enforce the law. The laws that are set by the state of North Carolina, the federal government. We can't summarily dismiss or overlook laws and say, well, we're only going to enforce the segment of the law that we agree with. Can't do that. Right. You're absolutely right, Sheriff. Absolutely right. But if you take that out to its natural conclusion, that kind of a statement, then Dick Cheney and George Bush would be on trial or already would have been convicted for crimes against humanity, war crimes, and the crimes that we use to hang people at Nuremberg. But We don't go that far. What we're talking about here are a bunch of brown undocumented workers. And as the sheriff says, got to enforce the law. Absolutely, Sheriff. Down on that level, you're goddamn right you got to enforce the law. Up on the level, where you have nothing to do with it, Sheriff. Up on the level where we have people committing mass murder and crimes against humanity, there is no law. Doesn't exist. But I digress. Owners and growers say they check documentation as far as the law allows, and they pay Social Security and other taxes on the wages. You know, the growers follow that part of the law that they're charged with following. Somebody shows up to go to work. All right, let me see your Social Security card. Okay. Let me see your driver's license. Okay. And then when they pay these folks, they pay the FICA tax, that part that the grower, the rancher, the farmer is responsible for. But that's not good enough. One grower said, quote, I'm having trouble getting workers in here. And listen to this. Then this grower, Martin Lively, in Hendersonville, North Carolina, said, quote, the American people ain't got enough sense to know that if the government is sending Mexicans back to Mexico, there's no one to pick the food they eat. End quote. Let me run that by again. One of the growers in Hendersonville, North Carolina, said, quote, the American people ain't got enough sense to know that if the government is sending Mexicans back to Mexico, there's no one to pick the food they eat, end quote. Wow. Yeah. Well, the government, Mr. Lively, that's sending people back is the government that was run for 8 years by war criminals. Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. They're the ones that got the law through in response to the capitalists who own them and want to destroy you, Mr. Lively, because you're a small independent apple grower. You're not supposed to be doing what you're doing. You're supposed to be working in somebody else's apple factory making $7 an hour.
To everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to gain, a time.
Before the hour. The reality of unintended consequences, huh? You vote these capitalist pigs into office. Well, not the capitalist pigs themselves, but the people who are owned by the capitalist pigs. The next thing you know, you're losing your apple orchard because you can't get so-called undocumented workers. One last thing about this. I quoted one of the growers, a guy named Martin Lively in Hendersonville, North Carolina. He said, I'm having trouble getting workers in here. The American people ain't got enough sense to know that if the government is sending Mexicans back to Mexico, there's no one to pick the food they eat. Isn't that a classic statement? Isn't that an essential truth? That's right. Huh? There it is. Now, here's the follow-up. I quoted for you Anthony Owens, who's a grower, apple grower, and president of the Blue Ridge Apple Growers Association. Owen said he tried hiring local, non-immigrant workers last year to pick apples. But the people he hired quit after just 3 hours. Why? I thought these brown people were taking American jobs. I thought these undocumented workers were a security threat. Well, they're coming up here taking American jobs. Remember I told you about the situation apple growers out on the West Coast where the idea was, I think it was in Oregon, the idea was to hire high school students to go out and work on the weekends, or was it college students? Doesn't matter. And the students went out, and after about 15 minutes, they said, nah, pass. No, thank you. So there you go. We don't have any good, white-skinned, red-blooded Americans, you see, who will get out in the apple orchards and get up on those ladders and start picking apples for $6 an hour. I'll be damned. We just don't. Not yet we don't have them. But it's coming. When the Koch brothers and the rest of these capitalist sons of bitches who are destroying the country, when they're finally finished, oh, there'll be plenty of people who will pick apples, white-skinned people, and black-skinned people, too. Americans all, who will pick apples for $6, $5, $4, $3 an hour. But in the meantime, let's get back to reality. In the meantime, the apple growers in North Carolina are faced with a dilemma. The law is the law. And, of course, you could assume that the apple growers up there, to some degree, voted in people who made these laws. And now the law is coming around and biting the white-skinned apple growers on the ass, and it's really hurting them. And some of them, just like the peanut farmers and the soybean farmers and the cotton farmers in South Georgia, some of these growers in North Carolina are going to lose their businesses. They're going to lose their orchards, going to lose their homes. Not going to be able to get bank financing anymore. Why? Because there's no one there to harvest the crop. And why is there not? Well, just like Martin Levy said, the American people ain't got enough sense to know that if the government is sending Mexicans back to Mexico, there's no one to pick the food they eat. Quote, unquote. There is an essential truth. There it is, right there. My goodness. Moving right along, guess who is the next target? Whose retirement fund is the next target of the budget cutters, the capitalists, the people who do not want a stable middle class? Only this time they might have gone a little bit too far, but guess who's next? The United States military is next. Let me quote from the from Navy Times. It says here, they start with, you know, with the micro and then expand to the macro. Like thousands of other troops, Air Force Lieutenant, First Lieutenant Daniel Warden said he was stunned and offended by a recent proposal to overhaul the military retirement system in a way that would directly and deeply affect today's troops. Warden, who's deployed in Baghdad, Iraq, told Military Times, quote, "The nation has been at war for almost a decade, and the average citizen has not been asked to sacrifice anything. Taxes haven't been raised, food hasn't been rationed, nobody has been drafted. The only ones who have sacrificed over the last decade of war have been the military and their families," end quote. So, what's got Mr. Warden's Navy blues in a wad, or Air Force blues in a wad? Well, a proposal unveiled by the Defense Budget, or Business Board. Defense Business Board. Isn't that a scary title? The Defense Business Board, a Pentagon advisory group. And what they're trying to do here is save more than $300 billion over 10 years by changing that traditional 20-year pension for military personnel, right? In for 20, you get a pension, right? They want to change that into a corporate-style 401k savings account. Son of a bloody bitch, can you believe this? Yeah, it's happening. Here we go. Under that plan, the military would contribute cash to individual troops' accounts, possibly about 16% of basic pay per year, a 401k, for people who are out killing and be killed, a 401k. Yeah, that's here it is. The Navy Times goes on, the plan would dramatically shift money from the roughly 19% of the force that serves 20 years or more to earn an immediate lifetime pension. Only about 19% of the force serves 20 years, but they get an immediate pension. All right, it'll shift that. And by the way, well, I'll get that in a second. And they'll give much of the 81% of the mostly enlisted troops who leave after 4, 6, or 8 years with no retirement benefits. So they're going to take it away from the lifers and give it to the people who normally don't have a retirement, because they're only in for 4, 6, or 8 years. And the retirement plan is going to disappear. Now, the reason they're doing this, you see, because the lifers are the ones who are going to say, wait a minute. The guys that have been in for 4, 6, or 8 years are going to say, woohoo, I get an extra $100. Hot damn. You see how this works? They don't just do this to the private force, the private labor force of turning people against each other. This is the oldest capitalist trick in the world. Turn workers against each other. Make black workers angry at white workers. Make white workers angry at Latino workers. Do anything to divide and conquer. Now it's into the military. So set the lifers against the people who are only in there for 4, 6, or 8 years. Isn't this cool? This is what capitalists do. They still want the soldiers to go do their goddamn filthy wars, but they don't want to pay them a pension. So how do you get away from that? Well, you just tell the younger guys, look, hey, boys, we're going to open a 401k for you. Hell, you only have served 4 years, and when you come out, man, you might have, oh, I don't know, $6,000-$7,000 in there. Yee! Can you believe this? Well, believe it. Believe it. Critics say the plan will devastate retention and jeopardize the quality of the nation's all-volunteer force. Well, that doesn't matter. You can always find people. You can always find people. I mean, the capitalists are so destroying the American economy that eventually you'll have people crawling over each other in their military recruitment offices to sign up. No, take me! I can kill better than he can! Unbelievable. Back to Air Force First Lieutenant Worden, who said, quote, Congress put these conflicts, you know, Afghanistan, Somalia, Iraq, it goes on and on. Congress put these conflicts on the credit card. And now that we are finally winding them down, the plan to pay for them is to cut the benefits of the only people who sacrificed in the first place. Really? Of all the places the government can cut spending, they're going to come after military benefits after 10 years of war? He added, this proposal is a total affront to the men and women of today's armed forces. Oh, by the way, Worden is a native of Michigan who left his wife and three children behind at Grand Forks Air Force Base in North Dakota while on his second deployment to the Middle East. Well, First Lieutenant Worden, I know you're shocked and appalled, but who did you think you were working for? The American people? No, no. Did you think you were out there dropping bombs to preserve liberty and secure the nation and defend the Constitution? I know that's what you thought. And you're an officer. When the truth finally presents itself, Lieutenant, it's ugly, isn't it? You've been fighting for corporate America. And now corporate America says, oh, wait a second. Wait a second, too much money going to these boys and these girls when they come home. You know, after 20 years, hell, you can have people only 38 years old demanding a full pension. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
The fact is there's these prisoners buried in the sand, mass murdered in containers. The fact is in Afghanistan, more died than in New York. And most of them, civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of Death Row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar!
The country, it is school teachers and public sector workers, police officers, firefighters, first responders, EMTs, people who work on public school contracts or public employee contracts, cleaning out office buildings, you know, the state office buildings and so on and so forth. Those people are being slammed up against the wall. They're being told, look, you know, you people don't, you're a bunch of freeloaders. You're sucking off of, the honest labor of people in the private sector. You know what the governors of Wisconsin and Michigan and Florida have been saying and the federal government. You know what's been said. Now it's the U.S. military. Now it's the U.S. military. And I got to quote Lieutenant Air Force Lieutenant Daniel Worden again, quote, the nation's been at war for almost a decade, and the average citizen has not been asked to sacrifice anything. You're right, Lieutenant. Remember what George Bush said? Go shopping? He goes on, taxes haven't been raised, food hasn't been rationed, nobody has been drafted. The only ones who have sacrificed over the last decade of war have been the military and their families, end quote. That's right, Lieutenant. And now there is active discussion about taking the military pension system. 20 years in, if you're still alive and you're still sane, even if you're not sane, if you're still alive, you get a pension. Now they want to change it to a 401k for people who are carrying weapons, walking on somebody else's sovereign territory, being shot, shooting, participating in all sorts of blood and gore, coming home with missing limbs, half their brain shot away, God knows how many people they wasted while they were in a war zone, and now the capitalist pigs want to take away their pension. Hello? Do I hear a reaction? Now, remember what's going on in D.C. this fall, that super committee that's going to, you know, the six fascists and the six cowards that are going to try to decide how to cut spending and you know, get the budget balanced. Oh, that's real goddamn important right now, isn't it? Yes, amen, it is. What's important about it is in balancing the budget, they destroy everything that was put in place over the past 80 years, including military pension plans, in order to satisfy the capitalist pigs like the Koch brothers who are running the show now. But I digress. So, on the table, in the discussion of that super committee, will be major changes of the military's most fundamental benefit, retirement, after 20 years. Now, I'd be willing to bet that of the 12 committee members who are going to be discussing this, that the vast minority of them ever served in the military. But that's irrelevant. It's not whether or not they served. It's whether or not they are now ready, these capitalist-owned pigs, if they are now ready to say to the military retirees, you don't matter either. It's not just school teachers. It's not just police officers. It's not just firefighters. You dumbasses that we sent. You dumbasses who really bought the story. Oh, you're out there for mom, apple pie, and the flag. You're defending freedom. You were so stupid, and you bought that. So now what we're going to do to you is really ram it home and let you know exactly what the plan was. We don't give a rat's ass about you. I mean, we made that clear enough in the way veterans are treated when they come home. But now this? Well, you know what the ultimate plan is for the Koch brothers and these military contractors? Private military. Are you kidding me? That's so simple. Private military. Perhaps the most controversial part of this plan, according to Navy Times, would be its impact on today's troops, who would be partially grandfathered in and on track to earn a hybrid of old benefits and new benefits. This will reduce the value of their lifetime pension payments along with the incentive to stay for 20 years. They don't want lifers. They don't want people in for 20 years. Are you kidding me? What they want is a fresh crop of 20-somethings every 4, 5, 6 years. Give us those boys, just like we do the private sector. Roll them in, roll them out. They'll get a 401k. That's what they'll get for out there defending capitalist interests around the globe and stealing other nations' natural resources and killing people in the name of corporate America. Just roll them in, roll them out. And when they get mustered out, oh, gosh, you'll have a 401k, boy. You know how much you'll be in there? Hell, there might be $5,000, $6,000 in there. How's that? That'll get you down payment on your trailer? Yeah, well, it'll help get you into technical school where you can go learn how to, pick apples? I wonder how many people in the military ever thought it would come to this. Y'all thought you were immunized against this sort of stuff, right? Because after all, what was the story? What was the story again? Tell me again. you were out there defending the Constitution of the United States and, by extension, the homeland, right? That's why you were sent to Iraq. Iraq was such an enormous goddamn threat to the United States, wasn't it? Huh? They were going to come over here and... Now you're starting to understand, aren't you, folks in service? And this program is carried on our Armed Forces Radio Network. So now you're starting to understand, aren't you, what kind of a trick bag you were forced into. It's really a mess, isn't it? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.